Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show here. And my goodness, it's so glad to be on the air here. I got to apologize right now. We may have a little bit of an issue. Our local road runner has been going up and down all morning. And we're able to do the show over the internet right now. But I just want to give you the heads up. There may be a moment where all of a sudden I'll go quiet, the music will come up, and I'll come back on a regular phone line. But that's the reason for it. The road runner apparently was doing some maintenance on our local area routers. Something went wrong. It's a mess. They're saying it's going to be all day trying to fix the thing, and so that's kind of where we are. We have got so much to talk about today. Oathman is in the control room. Our phone lines are open, 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933. The chat room is running. The webcam is up and running. At the moment, everything is go, and we're ready to just move on ahead. Now, the big news right now, of course, is that Iran has apparently accepted the broad outline of the nuclear fuel deal. They want some changes. They want another 48 hours to basically come up with a final resolution. Everybody is trying to spin this their own way. We've got a report that's coming out of NPR, supposedly originating with Reuters, which is saying that Iran is rejecting the idea of refining their own uranium in Russia. They want to simply buy the refined fuel, which doesn't satisfy the requirements of the United States and France and so forth and so on. Meanwhile, we've got the Russian government saying that Iran didn't say anything about that at all. They're not refusing at all to send their uranium to Russia. So everybody's trying to spin this. And the bottom line, as I mentioned before, if this deal goes through in any way that seems credibly to address this issue of Iran's non-existent nuclear weapons program, then the justification for invading Iran has gone away. And that leaves the United States and Israel stuck. The United States has got an economy that is crashing because of U.S. government policy, and everybody in this country knows they're who to blame. And we've got two wars running, two big ones, Afghanistan and Iraq, started with lies and deceptions. They're not going very well. We've got these other little minor skirmishes around in Somalia and Pakistan. They're not going well. The U.S. was desperate for a new major war in Iran that they could feel heroic about and try and revive a sense of patriotism among the Americans, where we'd say, oh, forget all about the bankrupt homes and businesses and foreclosures and all the rest. We forgive you for all of that because, after all, there's a war on, and we've got to back the government when it makes war on whoever it is they're making war on this week. And, of course, from Israel's point of view, it is an even more serious situation because Israel needs a war, any war. They don't even care with who, but they need a war so they can go back to playing victim and try and counter the growing movement to forward the Goldstone Report to The Hague, to the War Crimes Tribunal there. Now, in what is probably the most shameless display of kowtowing and genuflecting and debasing themselves to Israel, the U.S. Congress is apparently considering a bipartisan resolution that would call on President Barack Obama to exercise the U.S. veto at the Security Council to block the Goldstone Report from being sent to The Hague. So once again, the world sees the U.S. Congress, supposedly a Congress that stands for the principles America was founded on, which includes thou shalt not commit war crimes, just bowing and doing whatever Israel wants. Israel wants the Goldstone Report stopped. Absolutely. Just make sure I get that campaign check, and I will bow and scrape and abase myself to almighty Israel. And it's one of these humiliating situations where even if they succeed in blocking the Goldstone Report, the political damage, both to Israel and the United States, is not going away. Israel has lost its Teflon coating over this whole situation. And now the whole world sees how owned by Israel the United States government actually is. It's just, it doesn't get any more obvious than that. And the real ringer is that Israel may go through all of this. The U.S. government may completely abase itself and humiliate itself, groveling on the ground before Israel. And it may not make a difference because under General Assembly Resolution 377, if the Security Council fails in its primary purpose of keeping the peace and prosecuting war crimes, the General Assembly can bypass them. the General Assembly could vote to send the Goldstone Report to The Hague, and the U.S. can't do a thing about it. And remember, the General Assembly just recently passed that resolution calling on Israel to sign the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty and to submit to the same IAEA inspections that Iran is undergoing. And Israel refused. So obviously the General Assembly, the majority of the General Assembly, is their patience with Israel has come to an end. And of course, as Israel continues to act in a belligerent fashion and basically openly defying the United Nations, Israel itself, by its actions and arrogance, is creating a political climate in which even those nations that would like to help Israel out of this mess don't dare do so because they don't want to be seen as supporting anybody's war crimes, let alone Israel's, by their own population. So if the Security Council is vetoed, and which looks like it's going to happen, by will of the American Congress, the finest Congress that money can buy, General Assembly Resolution 377 allows the General Assembly to go ahead and bypass the Security Council and send the Goldstone Report to The Hague anyway. And again, even if it gets blocked, even if Israel's leaders are never held to account for their war crimes, they have destroyed Israel's image in the process. And remember, your public image in the modern world, especially media-dominated, the public image is as important an aspect of foreign policy as your military might. And Israel has lost their Teflon coating. So it probably is going to come as no surprise to anybody that an unknown party today fired one of those little firework rockets, the Katyushas, fired from Lebanon into northern Israel. Didn't hit anything, didn't kill anybody, didn't cause any damage. But, of course, it was just the justification that Israel needed to launch a major artillery barrage back into Lebanon. They targeted a town, Hula, I guess that is, in South Lebanon. Here's the interesting thing. You need to understand something. Why would anybody in Lebanon give Israel exactly what Israel most needed right now? Israel needed somebody to shoot a rocket at them. Please shoot a rocket. We need it. We need to play victim one more time before the media. And so right when Israel needs it, this mystery rocket flies up out of Lebanon, comes down, hits an empty lot, as they always seem to do, and destroys nothing, kills nobody, and Israel launches a major barrage back into Lebanon. Now, I want to call everybody's attention to numerous stories that we have linked to at whatreallyhappened.com over the last several months in which Lebanese border patrols continually find these rockets set up just inside the border from Israel running on timers, which means whoever set them up set them to go off days later and went back to wherever they came from. In one case, this was actually reported in Time magazine, the rockets were just leaned up against pieces of furniture in a junkyard. They weren't on launchers. They weren't on tubes to guide them. Nobody cared where the rockets went. They just needed the rockets to fly over the border. And that's clearly what happened here. Nobody in Lebanon is taking credit for this rocket. Nobody in Hezbollah is taking credit for this rocket. Who benefits right now? Who desperately needs a war with which to evade the war crimes charges coming out of the last war? Israel does. Folks, Israel shot this rocket in themselves is the only logical conclusion. Nobody in Lebanon is going to waste a rocket that doesn't hit anything just at a time when Israel most needed it. And so Israel is trying to crank up a new Lebanese war. If that doesn't work, they'll go after Syria. If that doesn't work, they'll attack Egypt. It doesn't matter. Israel's only possible means to evade the public consequences of Operation Cast Lead is to get another war going that the media can use to say, oh, forget all about that. Forget about Palestine and Gaza and all that stuff. That's so last year. Now we've got a new war going, and poor little Israel is fighting for its life one more time. I got to tell you, I think Israel's downfall is they've gotten away with this stuff for so long. They just keep doing the same thing over and over again, and they don't realize that the world has picked up on it. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. By way of deception, thou shalt do war. That's where this rocket came from. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Thank you.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the situation in Israel. It just seems like they're in a panic now to get something going today that they can use to distract the world from all the bad stuff they were doing basically a year ago. Okay. And you would think for most civilized nations, if they're facing war crimes charges, you'd think they'd maybe pull back a little bit. They'd calm down. They'd maybe do this. See, we're really not so bad. We're not abusing the Palestinians. We're really doing as well as can be expected for them, all things considered. But that's not Israel's way. And today, Amnesty International has basically reported that Israel, which controls the water supply into the occupied territories, is basically denying adequate water to the Palestinians, adequate fresh water. They're not getting enough to meet minimum standards of human survival, according to Amnesty International. Meanwhile, the illegal settlements in the occupied territories, many of which are illegal even under Israeli law, have got oodles of water. They have irrigated gardens and fountains and swimming pools and all of this wonderful stuff. And the Palestinians, whose land it actually is, are getting nothing. They're getting, it's not even sufficient to sustain life. And when they go out and they're trying to find other sources of fresh water, the sewage systems have broken down since Operation Cast Lead. There's some serious health issues going on there. And the disparity for this so-called democracy, you know, for the illegal settlements to have, you know, tons and tons of water, and for the people whose land it really is to basically be, you know, thirst is being used as a collective punishment weapon, which, by the way, is another war crime. When you turn down the water to collectively punish the population of an occupied territory, that is a war crime in and of itself. Now, meanwhile, there's been another round of attacks on olive groves. As you know, the Palestinians, one of their big export crops and sustenance crops are olives. They have olive trees. And one of the very common tactics the illegal settlers will use is to basically raid the olive groves and chop down the trees and destroy them before the crop can be harvested. And this is not only, of course, a loss of the income from that olive harvest, but also it takes many, many years for trees to grow back to the point where they can produce a saleable olive crop. So it's vandalism, it is economic warfare, it is an attempt, again, to impose starvation on the occupied population. Again, that is a war crime. And it just goes on and on and on. And we have these Palestinians who are there standing in a lot with all these tree stumps and the remains of years of hard, peaceful agricultural work lying around them. And the common sentiment there is, what did the olive tree ever do to Israel that the Israelis come in and simply cut them down? In a lot of cases, the trees are just stolen outright. It's apparently a very trendy status symbol to have a complete olive tree from the occupied territories in your garden, you know, back in regular Israel. That's sort of a little, you know, thumb your nose kind of a thing to the international criminal courts or whatever out there. But in any event, the olive trees are the property of the Palestinians. They are on Palestinian land. These Israelis have got no right to come in and destroy these groves. And, of course, the Israeli Defense Forces do not do anything to stop them. They'll basically, after it's all over, they'll come by and say, oh golly, I guess something really bad happened here. And, of course, on top of that, we've got this situation where Israel, over the weekend, was attempting to provoke a new intifada at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And fortunately, people did not rise up. They did not respond. They were not goaded to the point that Israel wanted them to rise up and do a riot and an intifada. And as I was saying over the weekend, and Steve over at Desert Peace picked up on this and got the word out. And I actually got email from people in Palestine who heard these words, remember how Gandhi got the British out of India. The British were desperate to provoke a violent response by the Indian people so they could go around and say, look, they're barbarians, they're savages, they need the blessings and civilizing influence of British rule. And all Gandhi said is just sit there, do nothing, and just let the British do what they're going to do, because the more they do it, and the more the world sees them do it, they're going to lose the moral high ground, which is exactly what is happening right now in Israel. They are losing the moral high ground. They're losing their Teflon. The longer the Palestinians do nothing, the worse it's going to be for Israel. The longer the Lebanese do absolutely nothing, the worse it is going to be for Israel. That's why I know that Israel fired that Katyusha rocket from Lebanon earlier today. Their people snuck across the border, set up the rocket, came back and fired it over, said, oh my goodness, we're under attack, so that they can play their little victim game again. But the Lebanese are smart enough to know that the longer they refuse to be provoked, the worse it's going to be for Israel. Israel's looking at war crimes charges. The Palestinians know that the longer they refuse to be provoked, the worse it will be for Israel. Israel's desperate for a distraction. The longer everybody refuses to give them that riot, to give them that intifada, to give them that act of violence that they can use as a justification or a distraction, the worse it's going to be for Israel. Because in all probability, the General Assembly will bypass the Security Council and send the Goldstone Report to The Hague. The European Union is already drawing up a list of names of Israeli officials they will arrest on setting foot anywhere in the European Union. So this is a time for calm. Don't do anything. Let Israel act like the jerks that they are, where all the world can see it. It is only going to come back and hurt Israel that much more. We have a caller on the line, Rick in Kansas. Aloha, Rick. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hello, Mike. What's on my mind is with the economy going the way it is, the government's getting a lot of stuff that they really like. Okay, and one of the things that they didn't want to have to do was do where you're forced to enroll into the army. What's that called? A draft. They didn't want to do the draft.
Yeah, but they got an economic draft going here because it's either join this, you know, become a soldier or starve.
Exactly. And so I got a tip for all the young listeners out there, and that is when they enroll and they talk to a recruiter, the recruiter is going to give them a list of jobs that they want that person to fill, okay? And that person's got to pick one of them jobs, okay? I knew a recruiter. Well, my stepdad knew a recruiter, and I talked to him before I joined in there. What the recruiters do not tell you is you can pick any job in the Army you want.
They don't have to give it to you.
They don't have to give it to you. You're right, but they usually will because they want you in the Army. Okay,
mm-hmm.
They wanted me as a sniper because I have excellent peripheral vision. I wanted to be a computer repairman, and so that's the job I got. And the only time I would have saw action would have been if my rat rig was blown up. In between the time they pulled me off the front line and gave me a new rat rig, I was supposed to hold that ground.
Okay, Rick, we got to take a break. Rick, hang on to the phone. We're going to stop for commercials. Don't go away. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're still on the phone with Rick in Kansas. And, Rick, you were talking about when you go to a recruiter, they'll give you a list of jobs, and they'll try and give you the one that you want because they're trying to recruit you. But the bottom line here is once you sign that contract, they can give you whatever job, you know, they feel they want to give you. I mean, let's face it. Nobody signs up to peel potatoes. And the reality is that, you know, the recruiters will make all kinds of promises to you, which can be broken, and the courts will not enforce any promises that were made to you. And that's just the way it is. So you got to be very, very careful and understand, you know, what you're getting into, because the recruiters, they're on quota systems. They're going to tell you all kinds of stuff to get you in the military because they got to make their numbers. And they're going to tell you whatever they think is going to get you to sign that dotted line.
And they can even lie to you.
That's
but
right.
They do try to give you the job you ask for. And if you don't get it, the first time, you can always come back, because until you sign that contract, you know, and your freedoms are taken away, like you said, they can do anything they really want to you once you sign that contract. You do have a little bit of choice. Anyways, the other thing I wanted to get on was I wanted to inform people of that. Most people don't know that. They go into sign up, and then they say, you know, well, we want you to be a 16 gunner, and, of course, that's what the person it becomes. Anyways, the other thing I wanted to mention real quick was that Ron Paul said that six or 800 people die every week from the flu, and only 1,000 people have died from the swine flu. And, you know, I think them numbers, you know, are shows, you know, how desperate this government is to give people the shot. And that's all I wanted to say, Mike.
Well, no, definitely the numbers aren't there. And again, I think what is going on is I think the push for a global government rested on three legs, three foundations. The first was global warming, which was going to be used to bring about a global environmental authority. That's what they're going to try and do in Copenhagen in December. That's not working out too well because the Earth is actually getting cooler. Carbon dioxide's going down, and the global warming cultists are just in an absolute tizzy. They don't know. Now they're trying to rebrand as drastic climate change being the enemy. But the bottom line is their prognostications were all wrong. So there's no reason for us to give more money and authority to these people. The second foundation, I am convinced, was this when pigs fly flu, and they were going to create this global pandemic emergency, which doesn't really exist, but if they could sell it, then all of a sudden they could say, well, we must cede some of our national sovereignty to the World Health Organization so that they can come in here and take care of us and make sure that we're not going to die. And then the third foundation, I'm convinced, is a global financial authority with which they're going to say, well, only a global financial authority is going to be able to clean up this economic mess that we're in. This would certainly explain why our own government seems to be wanting to destroy the economy than save it. But again, I think for most of the people of the earth, they see globalism as the problem and selling them more globalism as a solution. That's a tough sell. But in any event, two of the foundations for the global government, the global warming and the global pandemic, they're not playing out very well. And most people are beginning to really get a strong sense there's something on the up and up. It's the Wizard of Oz with his papier-mâché head dipped in kerosene and set on fire. And that's all there is to it. Okay? Is Rick there, or did we lose our connection? No, we're still connected.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay.
Anything
I just
else?
Just one more quick thing is that pandemic scare actually does work, because my neighbor got a cold, and he told me that he was scared it was a swine flu until I told him, you know, how bogus it was. You know, so it does work to some extent, and that's all I have to say.
All right, well, thanks an awful lot, Rick, and thank you for the phone call. We're going to switch over to Frank in New York. Aloha, Frank. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. Listen, I just wanted to say I thought your analysis of the Lebanon rocket incident is spot on. That is a Mossad kind of operation. And also, I think if you look closely at the bombing in Baghdad over the last few days, killing all the civilians, you'll see that that was a definite CIA and Mossad operation. The CIA has a policy of hiring the Mossad to do a lot of work in the Middle East, since we don't have people in the field that can speak the language.
And, yeah, very much so.
We have to be aware of that. And also, you did mention that the bombing in Pakistan last week that killed the 60 civilians. Although the U.S. media has not reported that, but if you read the British press, the German press, the Russian press, the Pakistan Daily newspaper, or the Pakistan Times, you know, they've covered that in great detail. So in a sense, you're right, but I think Obama will, you know, basically not pass on the Goldstone report to the World Court. I think he's going to terminate it. It'll stop at the Security Council, because I believe Netanyahu has his long-term birth certificate from Kenya. And I think that's one reason why Barack, when he pressured Netanyahu earlier in the year to stop the new construction of settlements, that Netanyahu said not at all, and Barack Obama did nothing, you know, after that. He just allowed it to continue. And also, if you read the Israeli press, the Jerusalem Post, the Haaretz, there's much material that sort of, you know, states that in the common view of the people as they respond to articles regarding foreign policy. That's all I have to say, Mike.
Yeah. No, well, you're absolutely right there. Obama absolutely caves into everything that Israel wants. But here's the interesting thing. If, I'm going to rephrase that, when the United States government exercises their veto in the Security Council to block the Goldstone Report from going to The Hague, and then the General Assembly turns around and they send it along around the Security Council, two things will have happened. The Security Council will be seen as irrelevant now, and so will the United States, because they've lost control. And all the United States can do is marginalize itself by continuing to back Israel and protect them from their war crimes charges.
Mm-hmm.
This is causing so much damage to the U.S. government, and that's why this little craven action by the U.S. Congress to vote through a resolution saying, yes, we're going to protect Israel, blah, 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 blah. I mean, what it makes us look like to the rest of the world, and as I said before, for Israel is also true of the United States, our public image of what we are to the rest of the world is as important a factor in foreign policy as our military might.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, America's image in the world is, it's absolutely in the Al-Qaeda.
Yes.
Right now.
The only thing the U.S. and Israel both have are big pockets, and it wouldn't surprise me for Israel using American tax dollars to pay off countries not in the General Assembly not to pass on the report. And I
well,
think
they tried to do that to block the request for the NNPT and the IAEA. And as I said, the problem is money only goes so far because Israel's arrogance has created a political climate in which even Israel's friends don't dare help it because it would look like they're helping it. There
and
was
also the American arrogance. American arrogance as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's working against them as
thanks
well.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
You got it. Thanks an awful lot, Frank. We've got one more caller. I think we're probably going to keep Peter into the next segment because I want to wrap up on this before the commercial break. There was a movie not too long ago, Anna and the King. It's the non-musical version of the story of The King and I, which, by the way, is a hoax, and the people of Thailand don't like that story at all. I don't blame them. You know, it's a goofball. It was a hoax. It was a fabrication. But that being said, the movie was really wonderful. And there's this wonderful scene in there where the King of Siam has arrested some people for a crime. And the Jodie Foster character starts screaming, I'm going to tell the king that he must let them go for mercy. And then the king says, no, I have to send them to their death now. I was going to let them go to be merciful. But now that you said you can make me do it, I can't do that anymore. And the same thing is happening around the world. Israel has made such a big noise of, I'm going to make you block the Goldstone Report, that other countries around the world are saying, I can't do it now. You know, if you'd stayed quiet and low-key, I could have helped you. But now that you've gone public threatening everybody to block the Goldstone Report, I can't do it without looking bad to my own population. So Israel's arrogance may be leading it to a major, major fall. And ultimately, the bottom line is, if the United Nations fails to hold Israel to account for its war crimes, then the credibility of a future global government based at the United Nations is completely dissolved. It's gone. It's crumbled. Like it's made out of compressed rust. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors with Peter in California.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of hour number one of our show today. We're going to go right to the phones. Peter in California. Aloha, Peter. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Hi, Michael. Just wanted to call in about the Israeli thing and the olive trees and so on and so forth. and the Goldstone report. And my comment is that there's multi-tiered objectives in ripping up these olives. Obviously, it terrorizes the Palestinians.
Yes.
Grinds their face into the dirt. But it also takes away. Israel will do that. For instance, when they bombed Lebanon, they bombed the milk factories and harbor mm-hmm. facilities and everything else. Mm-hmm. They don't want any commercial competitors. That's part of it.
Yes.
I'm sure they don't want olive competitors in their farming sector. And so they also don't want them to be able to make a living, and they want them to make it so miserable, of course, that they'll leave. That's the, you know.
Yeah.
On the Goldstone report, you know what? They're going to, it doesn't matter about our image in the world. Our politicians, you know, as the old saying goes, you know, all politics is local, and they get their money, and they receive their money locally. Of course, it comes from Israel, but that's all they care about. They could care less about what's good for the United States as long as they still keep getting their money from the lobby.
Well, I disagree because of a very simple reality. Israel's been doing this stuff for about 60 years, and for most of the time they got away with it because the media was totally owned and totally controlled. And both Israel and the U.S. government have just grown up with this idea that no matter what they do, all they have to do is spend enough money on public relations afterwards, the image will clean up, the American people will forget, and life will go on as it did before. But that's not the new reality. It's not the new paradigm. And I still think there's a lot of people inside Washington, D.C.'s innermost circles who are a little cut off from the real world by their own staff. I don't think they really get it yet that control of history and control of perception is no longer exclusively the domain of the corporate media. I mean, CNBC has lost half their viewers just in the last couple of months, and yet our numbers here at What Really Happened continue to go up.
Well, I agree with you, and I think that they do understand it. I think that, however, they get their campaign donations, and that's what counts. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If anything has told me, I've learned anything in the last couple of years, is that public opinion in this country matters like almost not at all. What matters is who pays who. And Israel pays out big money to buy Congress, and Congress, you know, Israel says jump, and Congress says how far, and perception be damned. It's money that counts.
Well, I agree with you up to a point, but as I said before, the issue isn't internal image, it's external image to the rest of the world. Right now, the United States needs all the friends it can get because of its economic woes. If we're making enemies of the very same nations whose assistance we need to try and save the economy, you know, we're not going to get the help that we need. People aren't going to be willing to cut us deals or, you know, give us a little more extension on credit. They're going to say, look, I'm sorry, I can't back you. You're supporting war crimes. My own people don't want to deal with the United States anymore. I know in my own business, because I deal with an international clientele, over the last several years, I'm constantly hearing it from people in other countries. They see the United States as the third millennium equivalent of the Nazis together with Israel. You know, the last time it was Germany, Italy, and Japan. Now it's the U.S. and Israel, and I don't know who number three is in there. But we're being seen as the villains. People don't want to come here. People don't want to do business with us. They certainly don't want to loan us any more money. Our public image is, in fact, detrimental to the ability of the United States to function, let alone survive. And if our Congress doesn't understand that, then they really aren't qualified for the job of running this country.
Well, yeah, but Michael, that's always been the case. I mean, we've been backing them, as you said, for 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
All the war crimes, which have really, public, I think, perception has really only become aware of that really within the last 10 years, really. But,
yeah.
But it doesn't seem to, bother Congress whatsoever. I think it's a simple matter. They put their hand out. Israel puts money in it, and they could care less.
Well, that will be their downfall then, because when any life form gets out of touch with its environment, it's headed for extinction. That is an inevitable outcome, and I think our government is headed that way. They're out of touch with the realities of the present environment, and that is, you know, that's, you know, the doom is sealed.
One great illustration of this is. Look at all the things Obama has at least put forward, only to be basically spit on. Right, Israel has flatly spits in their face Congress doesn't. Congress aids and abets Israel in doing it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, like this thing they're getting ready to do, the pass a joint bipartisan resolution. Yes, we must stand by and protect Israel. And the rest of the world is saying, you know, the United States is no longer the moral high ground. We no longer have the moral right to chastise anybody else on human rights. And remember, that's always been our number one cover when we start invading other countries. Now we don't have that anymore. If we're invading another country, we're invading them just to invade them. And that's going to work against us on a lot of levels, including domestically. Anyway, Peter, I got to let you go. We've got one more caller, and I want to get to them before the news breaks. So we're going to switch over to Steve in Ontario. Aloha, Steve. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yes, you being my technical guru, as I've called you in the past. And you,
boy, you're in trouble now.
I know, you said that the last time.
That's true. Take your beer and pour it in the top of the computer, and that'll fix it. No. Go ahead, what's up?
Seeing as it's a slightly different topic, but I think it's still a war, and knowing how much you love your wife, I love my wife, I have two daughters, I believe that there is a war on against our women, and I've heard it, I've read about it, I haven't heard it recently though, so I thought I would bring it up, is the mammogram machines that are out there that women clamor to get checked on have never, ever been approved by the FDA for use for checking for breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
mm-hmm.
the very first research studies on those machines came back that they were highly dangerous and could actually contribute.
They're causing more cancers than they're detecting and curing. Well, I don't think it's necessarily a war on women. I think what it is basically a medical establishment that exists to make money, to sell things, to sell treatments. This whole vaccine industry is designed to sell medicine to healthy people. That's the new marketing strategy. And they're always coming out. Have you ever seen a wonderful movie called The Road to Wellville? I'm blanking on the cast members off the top of my head. I'll look it up over the break and talk about it. It's called The Road to Wellville, and it's a light comedy that is basically set at one of the health spas run by Dr. Kellogg, for whom the Kellogg cereals were named. And it shows these very absurd medical practices that were in use back then. And the funny thing is, all of them were real. They were all the best that medical technology could do at the day. We look back on it now and realize it was completely useless. You know where the expression to blow smoke up your rear end comes from, right?
No, I don't.
Okay. There was actually an approved medical process to blow tobacco smoke as an enema up your rear end, that it was going to have a therapeutic benefit. That's where that... And, of course, it turned out to be completely useless and completely pointless, which is why to blow smoke up your rear... is synonymous with complete waste of time and pointless activity. There's a lot of stuff the medical establishment has thrown at us that turned out to be not only just useless, but some of it was downright dangerous. They don't, thalidomide is a classic example.
I just wanted to get that out there again. It hasn't been talked about in a while, but just warn your wives, just be aware.
Well, it's not just wives and the stuff is being given to men. It's
mm-hmm.
not aimed specifically at women. It is aimed at all of us to get more money out of us. The sicker we are, the more money they can make from us. And that is absolutely true. That's absolutely true. All right. Thanks an awful lot for the phone call. That was Steve in Ontario. Yes, it's absolutely true. The medical industry is an industry. They don't want us to be healthy. If we're all running around healthy, how can they make money off of us? There was one very famous case, I put it up at whatreallyhappened.com, I'll have to dig it out, where a group of doctors in a town was arrested and charged for fraud because they declared there was this outbreak pandemic in their neighborhood, and they said everybody has to get vaccinated, and they all got rich selling the vaccines, and it turned out there'd never been a pandemic at all. It was just a money-making scheme. Just because somebody's a doctor doesn't mean they're a good human being. Dr. Mengele comes to mind as an example. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after the news and commercials in about 7 minutes. Stay tuned and aloha, America.
The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I want to comment on a couple of things that we heard on the news break. They're talking about this deal with Iran going forward, about how Iran is going to send some of their low-enriched uranium to Russia, which will then refine them into reactor fuel rods and send it back. And they're saying this will all make it hunky-dory because these reactor rods can only be used in a nuclear reactor and not a warhead. Well, that was always the case, okay, because the enrichment level for reactor fuel rods is about 3 to 5%, and the enrichment required for a weapon is 95% and above. In addition, it was already reported a couple of weeks ago, the reactor rods that Iran is already producing have contaminants in them, which are not a problem for nuclear power generation, but which would prevent them from being used as nuclear weapons material. And it was being spun, aha, their nuclear bomb plan has hit a problem. The reality is that Iran never intended to make bombs, and so it doesn't matter if this material is inside the fuel rods or not. They don't care. It's irrelevant if it doesn't affect the ability of the uranium to work in a power plant, and that's what the rods were being built for. The amount of spin trying to go on and sell us all that Iran is this really bad place that has to be watched all the time. Meanwhile, we have Israel that has a nuclear arsenal. They have an underground factory underneath Dimona. We've got photos of it. They have never signed the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, despite requests from the U.S. and U.N. and from the IAEA. They refuse to submit to any kind of inspections. Israel is the one that is the rogue nation here. And Israel and their minions here in the United States, the obedient media and the obedient Congress, are trying to say, ooh, Iran is bad. We've got to go pound on Iran. And as I mentioned yesterday, one of our listeners had contacted Harry Reid and said, why is there this double standard? And Harry Reid wrote back a letter saying, well, Israel's nuclear program is not a threat to the United States. In essence, admitting that he knows Israel has a nuclear program that could be seen as a threat to somebody, if not the United States. Well, see, here's the thing. The Symington Amendment to the Foreign Appropriations Act does not make a distinction for friendly versus unfriendly. It is very explicit. Nations that possess or distribute or transfer or in any way come into contact with enrichment technology for nuclear weapons development are not allowed to receive any funding from the United States government. No military aid, no financial aid, no trade credits, nothing, nothing, nothing. And the U.S. government has been breaking that law to send your tax money to Israel over the last several decades. And folks, it has cost you more than four times the entire cost of the Apollo moon program. Remember, everybody was always coming, oh, all this money we're spending to go to the moon, and then we got the one small step for man, and everybody felt kind of good about it. And then we had this huge technological bonanza, because all the stuff that had to be developed to go to the moon all of a sudden turned into products. And we had Route 1, and we had Silicon Valley, and we had the corridor in Texas, and we had all these companies just exploding with all these new products that came out of the Apollo moon program. Well, we've spent four times that much money on Israel. We have no moment of pride we can point to, no giant leap for mankind, no technological fallout. We got a bunch of spies and art students running around our country with impunity and buying our Congress, and that's all that we've gotten for all that money. And the fact that the U.S. government, including Barack Obama, continue to send your money to Israel in violation of the Symington Amendment, even though, obviously, from Harry Reid's letter, they know Israel has nuclear weapons. They are breaking U.S. law to steal your money and give it to Israel. There is no other way to put it. They're stealing your money to give to Israel, and right now we can't afford it. Israel is a luxury the American people can no longer afford under the current economy. So, anyway. Getting into the economic news, since we seem to have segued in there, the former chairman of Citigroup, John S. Reed, has written a letter to the editor of the New York Times calling for Glass-Steagall to be reinstated. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about there, after the last Great Depression, because we're in another one right now and it looks to be worse, but after the last Great Depression, the 1929, 1930s, that basically ended when we got into World War II, at the end of all that, a law was passed, the Glass-Steagall Act, and it basically looked back at what had led to the wild financial shenanigans that had led to the Great Crash of 1929 and the Great Depression. And it found out that banks and investment companies had gotten into each other's lines of business, and it tempted them to do some very reckless situations where investment companies were writing themselves loans and banks were buying blocks of stock and leveraging and back and forth and all these little kind of games that Wall Street likes to play. And it made the sharpsters, the insiders, incredibly wealthy. And it overvalued the stock market and led to the crash and the Great Depression. 10 years ago, 1999, the United States Congress, the finest Congress that money can buy, under pressure from the deregulation people, including Senator John McCain, repealed Glass-Steagall. And everybody said, are you nuts? Are you out of your mind? Do you know what happened the last time we let the banks and investment companies get into each other's businesses? The economy was driven into a complete collapse. And they said, oh, no, the markets have matured. They can regulate themselves. Well, wrong, as we see all these painful years later. And so now that the horse has escaped from the barn, John Reed wants to come back and say, well, you know, maybe we ought to close that barn door. And I don't know, maybe better late than never, but frankly, Mr. Reed should have stood up 10 years ago and said, it is wrong to repeal Glass-Steagall. It is going to allow the banks and investment companies to play their games. They're going to get very, very rich, and they're going to impoverish the nation around them. And that's exactly what happened. So Reed's letter is a vindication for those of us who said the repeal of Glass-Steagall was a mistake. But as always the case with the very rich and the government, the admissions of error come way too late to affect any change at all. I mean, now the government grudgingly admits, okay, I guess there weren't any weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But, gee, the damage is done, and we're there, and we have to stay there because we've created this mess, and we have to stay there to clean it up. Well, that's nonsense. Back in 2003, we, the bloggers, we, the alternative media, we're telling the government there are no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. It is a hoax. It is based on forged documents. It is based on Israeli propaganda. And that's exactly what turned out to be the case. So, let's see. Getting back to the economic news here. The Standard & Poor 500 Index, and actually, the NASDAQ took a real clubbing today, rather surprisingly. The Dow edged just a little bit higher. The NASDAQ and S&P went down, but the NASDAQ took a real clubbing today. But the S&P is estimated to be about 40% overvalued and inevitably heading for a drop as central banks pull back on security purchases that pushed up asset prices. This is according to economist Andrew Smithers. And the reason this is important, at the day the stock market crashed in 1929, it was just shy of 30% overvalued. So we're past the degree of overvaluation that led to the crash of 29. And we're going to see it. So, and I think the thing that's really painful, and correct me if I'm wrong, the gamesters are still playing the games. They're not learning from all the pain and suffering that they're causing to the rest of the nation. They've got their bailout. They got that little safety cash. They're going back for another run at that wheel. Another shake of the dice. Another turn of the card. They're addicted. They're addicted to the adrenaline on Wall Street. It's time for an intervention because they're playing with your money, especially Goldman Sachs. Want to take a break for commercials? We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
When all this
America. Welcome back to the show here. We're getting a story coming out of Market Watch right now. Apparently, the Senate has agreed on this proposal for extending jobless benefits by another 20 weeks. It's been in committee. Apparently, they got it out of committee. They got past a GOP filibuster, and they're going to bring it to the floor for a vote. If both chambers pass this and if Obama signs it, it will add another 20 weeks, basically 5 months, onto the end of unemployment benefits for people who are unable to find a job, which is, you know, obviously a huge number of people right now. How they're going to fund this, I don't know, probably go deeper into debt. They certainly don't seem intent on, like, maybe stopping some of these checks going to Israel or cutting back on all of these bombs and things that they're spending all this money on. But at least, you know, there is a glimmer of hope that this may go through and that we may see some relief for people who have had their jobs taken away from them. You know, how wonderfully generous of the government to give them 5 more months of unemployment benefits after sending their jobs away to other countries with all their tax policy. That's still better than nothing. Better than a stick in your eye. Now, because of the sterling performance we already talked about early in the show by Barack Obama, in which he's basically caved in on every one of his campaign promises, totally backed down from Israel, has done nothing about ending the wars, is keeping the torture, is keeping the warrantless spying. Basically, he's Bush Light, is what he's turned into. And because of that, he is experiencing the worst poll rating drop in half a century. The decline in Barack Obama's popularity since July, and it wasn't all that good then, has been the steepest of any president at the same stage of his first term for more than 50 years. He's outdoing Richard Nixon. He's outdoing Jimmy Carter. Barack Obama is the worst president, I'd say, of the century, but we've only had two so far. But he, you know, and I'm not surprised his poll ratings are going down. He's a failure as far as the people are concerned. Israel loves him. He backs down and gives them everything they want. The defense contractors love him. He's out there getting ready to send more money to blow things up. Corporations love him. He has not done anything to reverse the trend of job loss to other countries. He's taking care of everybody except 300 million Americans. Somehow we don't rate. So, anyway. All right, well, we seem to have actually gotten through most of the show without Roadrunner abandoning us. They were really up and down all morning. And I had quite a bit of time on them with the phone. And let me give you a little bit of background here. First of all, because of what I do for my day job, because of what my wife does for her day job, we actually home office. We have, we're in a place with 3 bedrooms. 2 of the bedrooms are offices. And because of that, you know, we're living in a residential neighborhood. We overlook Pearl Harbor. When Roadrunner goes out, we're usually the first ones to call in because we're here trying to work and everybody else is off at school and wherever else. And this, so this morning, the service is going up and down, and I call Roadrunner, and I get this snotty little imperious phone bank girl, you know, who starts off by saying, well, I'll schedule an appointment for somebody to come and look at the equipment in your home. And I tell her, I have already checked the equipment in my home. And she says, well, sir, we must have an expert look at it. And I said, young lady, I have been working with computers for longer than you have been alive. And I have already checked everything inside the home. The problem is outside. And she says, well, sir, we have no proof of that whatsoever. And I said, well, gee, thank you for letting me know how I rate in your universe. And she says, well, perhaps I misstated that. What I meant is if nobody else has called in, then we don't see it as a problem outside your home. And as I just explained to you, I explained to her, we are probably the only people actually at home in this residential neighborhood on our computers in the middle of the day. Just didn't register with her at all. So I finally hung up with her, and then the next time it went down, I called back and I said, I want to talk to your supervisor. And by the way, the second time I called in, there was a recording. Users in the Pearl City area are experiencing a temporary loss of their high-speed internet connection. And so I get on, I talk to the supervisor, And it just goes around and around and back and forth. And it's just an ugly, ugly situation. So anyway, the nutshell is that Roadrunner is hiring a bunch of people that they put on these phone banks. And let's face it, if they're working on a phone bank, they're not really experts. If they were really experts, they'd be in the back room with the wires. And I understand hiring inexpensive people and putting them on the phone banks, but here's the reality. Here's the reality. If you're going to hire somebody on a phone bank and they don't know what they're doing and they don't know the systems as well as the customers likely do, teach them a little bit of humility, because otherwise all you're going to do is just annoy the heck out of those of us out here who already know how these systems work in very fine detail. All right, moving right along here. And by the way, that Navigon that I got for my iPhone is still running wonderfully. I'm playing with it. I'm having so much fun with it. It works really well. And I'm saying that as a preparatory to going back in and railing on Microsoft yet again. Windows 7, the upgrade version, when you get Windows 7 to upgrade your machine, it is locking up a lot of the computers out there. It leaves them in this never-ending reboot, 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 reboot. Can't even get to your little switch where you can say, let me go back to use my older operating system, for people who prudently tried to put a dual-boot environment where you have two different operating systems on your computer, which is sometimes actually a very practical thing to do. I did it by accident to one of my computers. I wanted to upgrade one of my Windows 2000 machines to Windows XP Professional. And when I got done, I had inadvertently dual-booted the system, which turned out to actually be very useful because I have a couple of things that run on 2000 that won't run on XP. Anyway, getting back to the situation, Microsoft apparently has known about this problem with locking up machines since July and went ahead and released the product anyway. And apparently they're posting all over the boards and all over, you know, the bulletin boards and the blogs and everything. They're talking about it, and Microsoft is simply not responding. And this gets back to the issue that I said before. One of the reasons our country is unable to compete with other countries right now is our tools are crippling us. We're spending all our time buying and maintaining and tinkering with the tools, and we have no time left over to get actual real work done. Because we're always futzing with getting Windows, blah, 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 version to run. And then we don't have enough time to do the reports, do the spreadsheets, do the presentation, do the animation, do the edit, do the music mixdown, that we actually spent all the money on this hardware to do. So we had product to go out the door with which we could earn money. Because when I'm sitting here fixing Windows 7, I'm not earning any money. That's not billable time. I can't bill my clients because Windows just crashed my machine. And now Microsoft knowingly sent Windows 7 out there knowing it was going to lock up some machines. We must bring back product liability to the computer software industry. It's the only way to get it back on track. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far a 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here, and we're going to go right to the phones. Clarence in Oklahoma. Aloha, Clarence. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call there, Mike. After listening to what you just went through with the people with the computer place and whatever, I'm having one with something that's actually much more down to earth. It's the United States Postal Service.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
And I live here, and, you know, they touch everyone's lives because they deliver the mail.
That's right.
I have a normal... Look, I was a federal employee for 35 years, 3 years.
Yep.
Therefore, you know, the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And these people... people, there's an older gentleman that delivers the mail, and I have a mail slot in my door. Let me explain this. It may not sound like a big thing to other people, but it's a big thing to me. In my door, I inherited this house, and there's a little mail slot. You know, you lift it up and through the door. And you.
I'm familiar with how mail slots work, yes.
Yeah. Well, the older guy, I like the way, during this time of the year, I mean, it's like 50, 60 degrees here right now. And when, you know, I like to leave the door open because if the sun, because I got a southern exposure, the sun comes in, warms the place up a little bit.
Yeah, okay, I understand.
Okay, so what happens is I will forget sometimes. And the older guy, when he comes by, he'll just open my storm door, drop the mail in. He has a little, he has a stand-in. You know, he's not there every day, like I couldn't be every day. I work with him. And federal civil service. So what he does, he'll just drop it in there. Plop. Now, I read somewhere, and I got a chance to talk to him today. I went out and sat and waited for him, because I thought, I'd like to talk, well, to the kid.
Clarence, you're losing me. I've lost track of what it is you're trying to tell me.
I'm going to go right to the deal here.
Yes, let's get to the deal, because we got another call.
Right to the deal here. He gets a someone that fills in for him. Is a young kid compared to you and me, and we're about the same age.
Yes.
If the door's open, he will not deliver the mail. He will put DSNA, door slot not available. And all that does is make the older gentleman have to make that deliver that mail the next day.
Well, you know, the postal regulations, they're drummed into these people's heads, and some will listen and some won't. And, you know, it's almost kind of a robotic environment. That's one of the reasons they had so many problems with postal workers going nuts in past years, is they had all these efficiency experts just constantly pounding on them to follow this rule and do things this way and back and forth. And they finally realized, you know, you could push them too far, and that's where going postal came from. You know, I don't think you're going to be able to change them. And yes, the post office definitely represents the ultimate behemoth bureaucracy that you're never going to be able to get any change from. And, you know, I'm sorry, it's frustrating. You know, might just want to put a mailbox just out on your front porch.
I thought about that, but why bow to their demands when there are people?
It's going to make your life easier.
It would make my life easier, but I'll tell you what. I'm going to wait for the young gentleman. I know when he's going to come by, but I'm not going to make a big deal about it. But not only that, I've confronted him. I've talked to him about it.
Okay. Clarence, we've got to let you go.
He's a snot-nosed kid, and I think this is almost what wants me to bring back the draft. I need to send those people.
Clarence, I got to cut you off. We got another caller, and we got to get to him. So thank you for the phone call. And we're going to let you go here. We'll talk to you later on, and I'm going to switch over to Joe in New York. Aloha, Joe. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call, as always. I appreciate that. I just wanted to say I got to congratulate you. I noticed every time I go to your website, you have that little ticker on the right. It shows you how many guest viewers you have and how many registered viewers, okay?
Yep.
And I can remember that when I was looking at that a couple months ago, it was probably in the ballpark of, like, you know, 1,300, 1,400, pretty much on the average. Now I see it breaking over 2,000. I think that's pretty damn good, Mike. And just to and the news that made my day today was that CNBS, oh, that was great. 50% of their viewership they lost. Those lying SOBs got what they deserve, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'll be the first one to say it. If we had a media that we could trust to tell the truth to the American people about what governments and corporations are up to, I would shut down what really happened and quit this radio show and spend the rest of my life chasing my wife around the condo. okay? But until we get a media that is going to be truthful with the American people, I'm going to keep the website running as long as I possibly can. I'm going to keep on doing the radio show. I'm going to keep on taking your phone calls. To basically get the stuff out there, you need to understand. And I think right now especially, we're at a stage where, as one of the earlier callers said, it almost seems like the government doesn't even care if we know they're lying anymore or kowtowing to Israel. They simply are past caring anymore. They're in that little lull where they think, okay, everybody knows we're selling out the country to Israel, but they're not going to do anything about it. But, of course, that situation cannot last forever.
Well, Mike, listen, you keep it up. I mean, little by little, I see people waking up, not as fast as I like, because they always want to be part of the herd. They don't want to think outside the box and independently. Hopefully that'll change. But you got to keep doing what you're doing. You're doing a great job, my man. We love you.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Thanks an awful lot. And, yeah, basically people don't want to get out of their little comfort zone that they're in right now because, you know, in their comfort zone, they believe they're good human beings, but they don't see a reason to stand up and fight against the government, and everything's all hunky-dory, and bowling night's the worst thing they got to worry about. And when you start getting out from that and you start seeing that the government really is not acting in the interest of the people, and you have to start deciding whether you're going to do something about that or not, that's a very scary thing for a lot of people. And to take action against the government that has gone corrupt and is selling out the country entails risks, which I don't need to go into. To know the government is doing something wrong and fail to act is to surrender that part of your self-image that says, I am a courageous and moral human being. And so a lot of people don't even have the courage to face that question. And so they'll grab onto any propaganda they can get gratefully because it allows them to go on thinking they're good human beings. They just don't see a reason to have to do anything about it right now. And that's why most propaganda really is not very clever. It's pretty obvious when you look at it. It's just there to give people who don't want to think an excuse to shut their eyes and their ears and go on about their lives without doing anything. But that is a rapidly dwindling minority as people lose their homes, their businesses, their livelihood, their futures, dissolving on this altar of corporate and governmental greed. People are waking up and realizing, okay, all of the assumptions on which I live my life don't work. You know, it's all a fraud, and they're beginning to see, okay, what's really been going on? And they're looking back over the last 10, 15, 16 years and saying, oh, all those nut jobs out on the blogs, they weren't so nut jobs after all. They were absolutely correct about what's going on. So, anyway, Joe, thanks an awful lot for the phone call, and thank you for the kind words. And it does make a sometimes lonely journey just a little bit less lonely to hear people who are saying, yeah, I agree, I see it too. And especially when you have the courage to speak out, you help others around you find that courage to speak out. And that is how consensus builds. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with the last segment of our show today after these words from our sponsors.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. Got a lot of stuff to talk about. First of all, the United Nations has just come out and asked Israel to halt all demolitions of Palestinian homes. All I can say is they certainly are optimistic over at the United Nations because they've been saying this for years and Israel never listens. But all kidding aside, the problem here is that, again, the UN has just created a situation where Israel is going to defy the requests of the United Nations, which is going to, first of all, it discredits the United Nations. Because if the UN can't get Israel under control, then there's no global government possible. You cannot have a global government where one nation is allowed to evade the consequences of international law. Now, the situation with the Palestinian homes, this actually should render Israel ineligible to even be in the United Nations. Because alone among all the members of the United Nations, Israel's membership is conditional. Israel was allowed to join the United Nations on two conditions. One, Palestinians have an unqualified right of return to the homes they occupied before Israel was created. Second condition, if the Palestinians should choose not to stay in their homes or not to return to their homes, Israel must compensate them for the loss of their property. Those are the two conditions. Israel has never once abided by either one of these conditions. Now, what's going on in Jerusalem? Obviously, Israel has always wanted Jerusalem. They covet it. They lust after it. They dream about it late at night. If you go back and you look at the original United Nations partition plan, the part that was going to be given to the Jewish people to become Israel did not include Jerusalem. Israel never went along with that. Every military move they have made is to grab Jerusalem. And even after the Six-Day War, when they got up to Jerusalem, the United Nations says, okay, the Jews get one-third, the Christians get one-third, and the Muslims get one-third. And the Muslims get the eastern part of the city, since that's kind of over in their territory anyway. And Israel never went along with that. So they're trying to basically encircle the city to make it all completely Jewish, make it completely Israel. And there are numerous United Nations resolutions saying, do not do this. And Israel defies them all. Now, what they're doing with the Palestinian homes is they're simply going around to these very old Palestinian buildings and saying, you don't have a building permit issued by the government of Israel, therefore we're going to knock your house down. And usually the Palestinians will say one of two things. In a lot of cases, they're saying this building existed before Israel did. In other words, it predates the founding of the Israeli government. In the eyes of Israel, it doesn't matter. You don't have a building permit. Boom, you're knocked down. In the other case, Israel is simply refusing to issue building permits to non-Jews. And so the Palestinians will build, on their own property. It is their land. And Israel comes by and says, you don't have a building permit, we knock it down. And it's just more game playing. And every time they knock down more Palestinian homes, the very next day, there are Jewish families being moved in. It is that blatant and that obvious. And the UN, because, again, it's happening in Jerusalem. Two more homes were destroyed just today in East Jerusalem. And it's very blatant. It's very obvious. It's very much in your face. And the United Nations said, please stop doing it. And Israel will ignore them again, which will only fuel the pressure in the General Assembly to bypass the Security Council under General Assembly Resolution 377 and refer the Goldstone Report to The Hague for war crimes prosecution. And Israel will be facing war crimes charges, and the government of the United States will be seen as accessories, not even after the fact. We paid for all of it. When Israel was showering white phosphorus all over the Palestinians, many of whom, if genetics and statistics are correct, are present-day descendants of the family of the historical Jesus, you paid for it. If you believe in a heaven and a hell, and God and the pearly gates, and you get up there, and you're trying on some of those wings, and you're plucking a few strings on the harp just to sort of see what that's going to be like, St. Peter comes over and says, look, we got it here that you signed a 1040 form that paid for the white phosphorus that Israel dropped all over the boss's son's kinfolk. You've read your Old Testament. The boss knows how to carry a grudge, and you are out of here. You're going to go down to the dark place, and you're going to burn forever and ever and ever and ever. Because you paid for the weapons that are killing the people of Palestine. You bear the guilt. Remember, all these lawsuits in the United States, the gun manufacturers are being sued for the crimes committed with the guns. Therefore, if Israel is committing war crimes with the weapons provided by the U.S. taxpayer, then you bear that guilt. And you can't say, oh, the U.S. government made me do it. Because the whole point of the Nuremberg Tribunal is you don't get to say I'm only following orders. If you go along with the war crimes of your government, you are a war criminal. All right. Moving right along to the swine flu. We've got a few minutes to cover some story here. Following hard on the heels of Barack Obama's declaration of a swine flu national emergency to deal with a disease that's killing far fewer people than ordinary seasonal flu, the FDA has now authorized the use of experimental, untested antiviral drugs to treat H1N1. In other words, if you've got the flu, what they think is the when pigs fly flu, they're going to stick needles in your arm full of stuff that has never been tested. It's experimental. They have no idea what it's going to do. You know, you grow a new arm out of your ear, and they're going to say, oh, that's an interesting result, and write it down. Hey, I could win a Nobel Prize for this one. Meanwhile, we're getting this very strange story. One of the readers at What Really Happened put this up. Apparently, there's something odd about the needles that are being used for the swine flu. This is a story coming in from Amsterdam, where the needles for the swine flu vaccine are much larger and hence more painful than the needles used for regular flu shots. And we are apparently being told from the Dutch Vaccine Institute, these needles are specifically developed for this vaccine. I want to know why. What is so odd about this vaccine? What is in there that it takes a specially developed, larger size, apparently rather blunt needle to inject? There are so many things wrong with this whole swine flu program. And again, a big part of it appears to be that they're trying to justify the creation of a global health authority with this global pandemic, which doesn't really seem to exist. Okay, meanwhile, let's see, other economic news. McDonald's is now completely out of Iceland. There are no more McDonald's restaurants in Iceland. The economy there is so bad. Remember, I'm richer than Iceland right now. They got caught up in this whole banking scandal thing, completely crashed their economy. The Icelandic people kicked out their government. Good for the Icelandics. And now McDonald's is leaving. If you're a big geology fan and you like tourism, now's a good time to go to Iceland. It's a very, very fascinating and naturally beautiful place, and it's a bargain right now. Unlike here in Hawaii. We got the natural beauty, but it's still not a bargain. And you got to go through TSA to come to Hawaii. That's another advantage Iceland has. When you go visit Iceland, they do not grope your wife and daughter in front of you going through the gate. They don't raid your iPhone for stolen pirated music, and they don't drop your laptops. Meanwhile, John Bolton is out there again, apparently as the cause for war in Iran dissolves in the face of this new nuclear deal. John Bolton is out there again screaming that Israel has a right to preemptively strike Iran. Folks, preemptively strike means attack without warning, attack without cause. Nobody has a right to preemptively attack anybody. Okay? The guy lives next door. I know he secretly harbors the desire to come over and abuse my wife. Does that give me the right to kill him? No, it doesn't. This idea of a preemptive attack is an idea that Adolf Hitler invented when he attacked Poland. George Bush copied it to attack Iraq and Afghanistan. Now Bolton wants to copy it to justify an attack on Iran. Iran doesn't attack people. Israel does. Israel's trying to kick up another war in Iran, even as we speak. Iran has not invaded anybody in 200 years. Israel's the problem, and it is time the world dealt with it. We're going to take a... that's the end of the show. We'll be back tomorrow, Wednesday, 5 p.m. Central, here on the Genesis Communication Network. Until then, stay safe, stay well, drive carefully, be skeptical. Don't trust anything the government is saying to you right now. It is all hot air, and aloha, America.